Mayor of the City of Toronto, John Tory, as 12 NHL teams descended upon his city. 12 more arrived in Edmonton yesterday for the upcoming Stanley Cup play-in and playoff games that will begin on Saturday for real, but exhibition games starting as soon as tomorrow. And Simmer, you got to look kind of through video. I know the NHL put out some video yesterday at what's going on in the hotels and in and around the hotels and the arenas. What's your thought on what they've been able to pull off so far?
Well, having stayed at the Royal York in the past and having breakfast with Craig Button when we worked for the Leafs, don't order the breakfast because I think it's what set us back $40 each for a coffee and an orange juice. No, I like it. I just wondered logistically with Hotel X to use in the Royal York, I'd wondered, would you take over the entire Weston Harbor Castle? So just more logistically. But I've got a lot of faith in hockey players. When you've put this into Canada, nobody's slipping outside the bubble that isn't going to be recognized for the most part like you could in Vegas. So I like what the NHL has done. And I guess just also the mentality right now between the NHL and its Players Association and players, there's a real respectful working relationship. And I think that's very important as you get into something like this that I think will make a lot of guys conscious and feel responsible that, hey, I got to do this right.
You are familiar with the movie Escape from Alcatraz with Clint Eastwood?
I am,
from back in the day?
Yeah,
I'm just wondering some scenario where you've got an NHL player who just needs to get out of the bubble, man, and who spends kind of like a week making a paper mache version of his head.
That's a good point.
That on, you know, on room check at the end of the night, you know, it looks like he's in his bed sleeping. Yeah. And meanwhile, under the cover of darkness, he has pole vaulted over the blackened out fencing and gone into that great big city of Toronto to find who knows what trouble.
But the reverse of Alcatraz, I'm trying to sneak people into my facility because I have a beautiful hotel room. I don't need to go anywhere. This is, I'm at the whatever, you know, so that's a little, now how do you get the person in? So this is more of a...
Well, you can get them in. Can you get them back out?
That's right. This is more about escaping Berlin. Like, so look at this more as the Berlin Wall.
Okay.
How creative. Could it do airdrops? Would you have somebody maybe jump off the CN Tower or even helicopter?
What a drop
somebody right on the roof.
Chopper in, chopper out. I like it.
Yeah. All right, and don't think for a second that there's anything such thing as a room check anymore in the NHL.
Okay.
Our next guest may have had the end of that in his career, but it ain't happening nowadays.
Here is TSN Hockey Insider Dave Poulin joining us in the Gabriel Pizza Hotline this morning. How you doing, Dave?
Very well, gentlemen. How are you this morning?
We are excellent. So things are set to begin. Before we get into your thoughts on the bubble and all the hockey news from the weekend, I did want to talk to you about a person very familiar from your time with the Leafs and certainly just being around the NHL. Eddie Schack passed away at the age of 83 over the weekend. Just from your, I'm sure, meetings with Eddie Schack over the years, what are your memories of him?
I think character is the best word, JR. You know, and that's what everyone, you know, refers to when they talk about Eddie Schack, and just wherever you bumped into him, the energy that he brought to the group. And I think the way that people watched him around in amusement, I was one morning, totally unrelated, I was on a ferry over the island in Vancouver while I was recruiting at Notre Dame, and I had a real close friend with me, and we were crossing, and Tiger Williams and Eddie Schack were on the ferry. And to watch the people around them respond to them, and to watch the way they interacted and the way they, I guess, made everyone feel like they were a part of the team, a part of the group, a part of the locker room and telling stories. And that's what he did. And he was a great storyteller and, you know, will be dearly missed by the fans in Toronto who were pretty spoiled because they had him around for a great run.
Pooley, when you broke in, I'm assuming there were still a bunch of characters in the NHL. Gosh, even when we were in Washington, has that dynamic? And hey, players are players. They're very dedicated now. But has the ship kind of sailed on the Eddie Schack kind of personalities?
Oh, I think it has, Simmer. I think for many, many reasons, social media being one of them. But when you do get, it's interesting, when you get a personality, and I'm going to give you an example of someone you know firsthand, when you get a personality that's a little more outgoing and ties the locker room together in a different way and has it, you know, by NHL standards, a little step out personality, he can be a really valuable addition. And the person I'm talking about is now in Winnipeg, and that's Dylan DeMello.
Yeah.
And I think when you watched him go into Ottawa and, you know, we were there doing games and just watch the impact he had, particularly on the younger guys. And not that Dylan is old by any means, but then he went to Winnipeg into a locker room that was, I think, wrapped pretty tight and pretty intense. And to bring a personality into it that can loosen people up, you'll talk to guys now and they'll mention that as a different attribute, whereas in the past you tried to curb it. I think now you try and encourage it and encourage what it might bring out in the other players. So I think it has passed for a lot of reasons, and not necessarily in a good way, because I think keeping a locker room loose and picture what the guys will be going through now, having a little entertainment and a little, you know, somebody to maybe take the edge off a little bit within these bubbles, I think will be incredibly important right now.
Do you think that players right now, Dave, as they have arrived in Toronto and Edmonton, are feeling nervous at all about just personal health, safety, what this is, how this is all going to play out? Not in terms of the upcoming playoffs, just their, from a personal point of view.
I do, JR, and I think that's human nature, and it's the unknown. And, you know, I can tell you just, you know, from personal experience, when everything started to change here and we were so highly encouraged to stay at home, it's just the first time going to the grocery store. When you were standing in line at the grocery store and you had a mask on and you had rubber gloves on and the person said, you know, you're next. And what were you going to expect when you walked in the grocery store? Well, multiply that, you know, by a significant multiplier. And what is these little exhibition games that they're playing starting tomorrow, I think are much more than that. It's going to be, you know, you've practiced against your own guys and you've even eased into that in small groups and at larger groups. But what's it going to be like when you bang into somebody for real for the first time? And what's it going to be like when you get into a scrum for the first time? And you know, what's it going to be like when there's adversity, when a real heavy favorite in this play-in round loses the first game? And how is that going to be handled? But I think there is trepidation, but it's as much because of just the unknown of what we've gone through. And we've dealt with a lot of unknowns in the last 4 months. And, you know, a lot of us at a little more advanced ages that, you know, had seen a lot and have seen things for the first time. And we're seeing things on such a broader scale because everyone is viewing things in the same manner across the world. It's not just, you know, specific to our sport or specific to our country or specific to, you know, our neighborhood or our family. It's looked at the same way. And so I think these guys going in, there's just going to be a little, you know, a little bit of a different feeling, and they'll have to get through some things early. And those first games, I think, will be really important to set the tone for everybody. Picture if you don't play that first exhibition day and you're watching for the first time and you're all gathered in your lounge or whatever, and you're watching and sort of saying, okay, how's that going? You know? And so it may be an advantage to jump right in and play that first game and not worry about all those things.
Do you think there'll be a lot of players, Pooley, that'll look at this, say, I've come out of the United States, where by the time I get into the bubble, the confidence and the way the NHL set it up, that you can mentally kind of check that one, but as you kind of pointed out, and then you'll quickly transition to, am I actually confident in my own physical ability to go right into what is basically a short-term playoff now?
Yes. Yeah, I think that's, you know, twofold question. And you know, a lot of guys are coming out of hot spots, and, you know, I have three daughters that live in the States and communicate with them regularly, and both have seen their cities respectively in Philadelphia and Chicago go through, you know, areas of high contest, and not only with the pandemic, but with all of the, you know, social issues that have gone on in these respective cities. And some of the guys, you know, were very involved in that. Take a Tyler Seguin down in Texas was very involved. But picture Dallas in themselves. They've got to be thinking, they almost survive their own state in order to get into the bubble. From a security and safety standpoint, the bubble is their new home, and it's going to be looked at as much more secure than anything they were dealing with in their respective cities, the Florida guys in Tampa. You know, and I think the Tampa guys, in talking to people down there, what happened there, they were the first team, I believe, to have three guys test positive and two members of the training staff. And they said that was an incredible wake-up, not only for their players, but for the organization and the way they had to look at it and the way they had to immediately tighten up if this thing had any chance of working. And, you know, I maintained early on that if we could get to the bubble, then this had a chance of happening. And it appears that, you know, as people checked in over the weekend, everybody's in. Victor Hedman was one notable absence from Tampa, and apparently that's a family situation, but he will miss the exhibition game, but will be joining. And other than that, the guys are there, and you know, now you've got to wait a few days and say, okay, how does it settle when they're there? You know, as they test through and they get the negative test back. And I always confuse myself with negative and positive, because negative usually, you know, is a bad connotation, and now it's a good connotation. So, you know, as they ease into that, I think it'll, you know, it'll be more and more comfortable for them.
With TSN hockey insider Dave Poulin. Dave, we saw over the weekend, I think, a first kind of viewing. The NHL put out some stuff, and various media members as well in Toronto and Edmonton, and how it's going to lay itself out with chain link. You know, everything's, you know, is under wraps. You know, blacked out chain link fence. There's the inside and the outside. What is your confidence level that this whole thing is going to hold?
Well, I think, you know, as I sort of section it off, and now we're going back full fledged. Tomorrow will be my first day in the studio, and, you know, through this entire process as we start up with, you know, That's Hockey with Gino and get going on the shows and the Sports Center and the coverage. But I do have a lot of confidence in it, and I have confidence because of the detail that they've put in. If you've seen some of the videos that have surfaced, there was a really strong video posted by Calgary of their own medical facilities within their setup. So this is just exclusive to Calgary and the way they'd set up their medical section for their team. And you're like, holy smokes, this is tremendous detail. So credit goes out to the NHL, to the respective teams, specifically to Toronto and Edmonton. But, you know, I'll give credit to the other host cities that were vying. I think a lot of really good stuff, guys, came out of Vegas. And, you know, that's why they were the leader early. They presented a plan. So essentially now you've got all the brain power of the casino management companies and the high-end hotel management companies and the detail they put into it. So the NHL looked at that, and that was why, you know, by all accounts, Vegas was a leading early candidate. But then the league, when they realized couldn't go there for medical reasons, they also took all that information and all the model and kept passing it to the other teams and saying, here's why Vegas is the leader. And the other teams, you know, begged, borrowed, and stole it and put it into their own plans. And some of the detail, you know, I know that players were posting as they checked into their rooms that there were pictures of their own families within their rooms, nicely framed. And, you know, and so not only did you have detail, but you had a variety of people involved. In order for that itself, the point I just mentioned, you had some different people involved, not just hockey people that say, what would hockey players want? You had a lot of life people that say, what would life people want?
Yeah.
And that's as important as anything in this process.
How much does this help right now, Pooley? We're in the middle of summer and you're not locked in a hotel. Now, I know there's a bubble, but the simple fact you'll be able to get out mentally and maybe exercise a little bit, run around the lake, or if you're out in Edmonton for an athlete versus feeling like you're hunkered into a hotel for 3 months.
I'll go right back to personal experience in the first few days, you know, when we were dealing with the shutdown after the 12th of March, how critical were walks to all of us as we walked through our neighborhoods and, you know, and every day was a 2-hour walk and we were walking 5 or 6 miles a day. And it was so important, and the weather wasn't great, but it was so important to get outside. So by the same context, it's the variety of things they've been able to offer both inside and outside. And I don't think that's that important through this play-in round simmer, because this is going to fly by. This is 8 or 9 days. On off days, you know, when we played, it was clearly off days, you know, between series, and early on, you wanted to watch the other games and see what was going on right away. And then that sort of ebbed a little bit, maybe through round two. And then when it got down to 3 and 4 and there were only, you know, a handful of teams left, you picked up your watching again. So I think early on, it's not going to be that significant to the guys. They're not going to want to go out or leave. They'll kind of stay close to home. But this play-in round is over in 9 days. I mean, it's going to fly by. And, you know, there's going to be lots to talk about. Guys are going to be watching other series. They're going to be watching guys they know on other teams. They'll be communicating with close people on other teams. If you've got a really close friend in the East and you're in the West, you may be texting them saying, you know, how was last night? How's it going? Anything we should know? You know, things like that will be shared amongst the players. And a lot of the players are so close for a variety of reasons now, you know, whether it be they have the same management group or they've played in world championships together or Olympics together. And so you've got those relationships, I think, that'll transfer information. But I think the excitement of the hockey initially, I would imagine it would be that round two would be when it would be start to drag. That's when, you know, all of these extracurricular things. And then the smartness of moving rounds three and four together. If you're in the East and you get through round two, you're moving to Edmonton. And you've got a whole new environment to deal with. And if you're in the West, yes, you're staying home, but you're one of the final two teams in the West, and you have a chance to play for the Stanley Cup. So I think the way it sets up, it will have some down times, it will have some drag times, and that's when all of these extracurriculars will be important. But for the most part, particularly early, hockey will rule.
With TSN Hockey Insider Dave Poulin, and you mentioned how quickly this play-in round, this best of five, is going to go. How critical do you think the first game in all these series and those best of fives is going to be?
Jared, that's when it turns to the locker room. However the first game goes, that's when you turn to the locker room and say, you know, like if Chicago loses that first game to Edmonton, that's when the veterans in the Blackhawks lean on experience and say, okay, we've lost the first game before. Now, you know, I had the experience of playing in three out of five series. These guys haven't. These are shorter series, but they've had tournament experience. They've lost games in, you know, maybe in world championships early in a round, but it's really going to be the locker room, the mood, the mentality, the coaches, because the temptation to overcoach after having 4 months off, I can only imagine some of the personalities. I know guys that would have an incredible temptation to overcoach no matter what happens. And I think, you know, the assistants are going to have to be critical to back a head coach off at certain points. And it might be particularly after that first loss. And there are going to be a couple of teams that win these first games that aren't the higher seeded teams. There are. Now, they may not win the series, but they're going to win the first games. And I think the two series of note to watch here both happen to be the same numerically, and that's the 11s versus the 6s. I think in the West, Arizona versus Nashville is a tough matchup for Nashville. And I think the Rangers versus Carolina, maybe for different reasons, and Simmer, you being an old goalie would love it, but I think the three-headed monster for the Rangers in net will be a factor. And I'm not sure that Carolina has the goaltending. And I know that the Rangers were 4-0 against them, but I think those 11-6 series will be of real, real interest as this plays out.
I actually think all the way back to 1988 and Jim Schoenfeld in New Jersey used a rotation of goaltenders. And would you look at teams like that, both with the goaltenders and in a short series, just as far as an overall lineup, that you might be willing to use your depth or change things up a little bit quicker? And not even as a negative. Maybe even you win game one and you roll back with a different starter.
It may depend on when your back-to-back falls in this first series, Simmer. Because for some teams, the back-to-back falls between games two and three. And, you know, for some it's three and four, but some are definitely going to play back to back. Some are definitely going to play three out of four in this opening series. And so if that's the case and you have two goaltenders, you know, in Boston, you're obviously very, very comfortable with your tandem of Rask and Halak. You're going to, you know, that wouldn't surprise me whatsoever for Rask to win the first game and then come back with Halak in the second game.
Brad Marchand is never shy with an opinion. Said yesterday after the Bruins wrapped up and prepared to fly to Toronto, he says it's going to be really sloppy hockey. Talked about ice conditions. Now, he did say, look, it's the same for both teams, and everybody's had the same amount of time to prepare, et cetera, et cetera. What's your feel on the type of hockey we're going to see, especially early on in these playoffs and play-ins?
Well, I'll address ice first because I've talked to a couple people on that side of it. And they feel they're going to be okay even with the volume of games because there's no fans in the building. And so they can control the humidity so well. And without fans, and if you think about it, when you go into a building early in the morning for the morning skate, often you're bundled up and you're like, holy man, it's cold in here. And that's what it's going to be like. And, you know, you don't have 18,000 people heating the building up. So that part of it. But as I've watched these highlight packages come through, JR, it's kind of funny because I watched one from Calgary in an exhibition game, and it was spectacular offense, like overpassing and empty net goals. And you were like, holy smokes, is this what it's going to be like? Because it looked like summer hockey. And then the one coach that complained about his lack of offense, I thought was really comical. And he was like, wow, we couldn't score out there. Either our defense is really good or, you know, I don't know if we've got enough offense. And that was John Cooper in Tampa. And, you know, after their first scrimmage, he was like, oh, man, either our defense is really good or, you know, we've got to get our scores going. I'm like, okay, John, your scores are going to be fine. You know, Kucherov is going to score points. Brayden Point is going to score. You've got lots of offense down there with Steven Stamkos, you know, who has been banged up a little bit through this, but there's certainly lots of offense there. So I think the offense will win the day early, as Brad Marchand said. I really do. And then things will tighten up quickly. And that might be that post-first game, post-second game adjustment that you're talking about, Simmer.
Do you think we might end up seeing a little more old-school messaging from coaches similar to that to try to create a sense of urgency and try to get guys, now Tampa Bay doesn't matter, but in the play-ins where it's like, hey, listen, we got, this means business here and I got to get your attention right off the hop.
See, it's easy to say that. And, you know, and as you're watching teams come back, you know, and obviously I live in Toronto, so I listen to a lot of what's here. It's all about the attention and detail to defense that the coaches are preaching. But what I don't understand is why that changes for one team during a four-month layoff. Like, they haven't executed it. They've never done it before. But just because you've watched film and you know that has to be the emphasis doesn't make it the emphasis. It's fine to tell the players that. It's fine to tell the players and show the players video and communicate with them on what you want them to do. But I don't see how one team coming out of this four-month layoff has an advantage because they've noted better than the other team that they have to pay attention to defense. You know, it's like we've talked about it. We know it's an emphasis. Well, of course, they've always talked about it, and they've always known it's an emphasis. So I like psychologically how coaches are trying to spin how advantageous this four-month layoff could have been for their team, but why for them versus the other 23 teams playing in this series.
I do want to ask you about what the situation in Arizona. What's going on with John Chayka? That was bizarre over the weekend where he apparently has terminated his contract, and the Coyotes put out a statement yesterday in which it was sharply worded. We'll put it that way. It's not a typical statement where there's a team and an executive that have gone their separate ways where the team writes about the executive the way that they did. What's your read on what's happened in Arizona?
Boy, oh boy, this is a different one, guys. You know, this is a young general manager in John Chayka who was very well thought of and, you know, a general manager of the future in terms of his use of analytics, but also his balance and the way he did that. I think this came as a big surprise to everybody, but there's still a lot of questions to be answered. Steve Sullivan taking over as interim GM, and an ownership change is very, very significant here with the new ownership and his son very involved. And, you know, also a new CEO and president, Xavier Gutierrez. And so different personnel, different people involved. And it does, they've alluded to the fact that there was something, an offer made or something that may not have dealt with hockey, that may have had some NBA implications in it. And so there are teams with multiple ownership groups who do own NBA teams and NHL teams. So you don't know if that's a fact. There's a lot of information here. The timing is very strange. As was the wording of the press release. It was very, very different.
It was. It was.
They said he quit on the team, which, boy, that's strong, strong wording.
Absolutely. Do you think in any way it has an impact on the team as it prepares for the upcoming play-in series?
I don't, only knowing Rick Tocchet as well as I do. And, you know, he will eliminate outside distractions with that group. And he will, you know, he will us against the world with Arizona, which is how they have to play against Nashville anyway. They're not the favorites in this. So, hey, let's just go out and play and not worry about what's happening around us.
All right. You mentioned you're back in studio after a long, long layoff coming up as soon as tomorrow. Kind of lay out how TSN television is going to attack the upcoming playoffs.
Well, we're going to break the games down. Obviously, you're starting games at noon. So, you know, you'll have some post-game, a couple of pre-game hits to do. And just breaking it down, and we've divided our staff up, you know, east-west. We've got Ray Ferraro out west. We've got Craig Button out west. Mike Johnson, myself, Jamie McLennan in the east. And Jamie's always focused on the goaltenders specifically. And so we're excited to be getting back to it, guys. We really are. And looking very, very forward to it. But it'll be fun to get in studio and to be talking hockey as hockey occurs, not what we think about hockey.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I think we're all thinking the same way. Be good to see you back on the TV tomorrow. Always appreciate the time, Dave. And we'll look forward to catching up with you again down the road.
Okay, guys, have a great day. Thanks.
Thank you. There's Dave Poulin, TSN Hockey Insider, joining us on the Gabriel Pizza Hotline, brought to you by Pizza Perks at Gabriel Pizza. Download the Gabriel Pizza Perks app and sign up today. We'll take a break, 8:33. Come back with much more. Don't forget that Mike Morreale, president of the CEBL, the Canadian Elite Basketball League, will join us after 9. We'll talk about opening weekend, which included a first game for the Blackjacks. He'll join us coming up after 9 right here on Sports Radio TSN 1200. Mentioned, I thought the interesting, Simmer, what he's talking about with in terms of the importance of game one and maybe the importance of coaches after a game one loss in particular, going, okay, scrap this whole thing. Yeah. Here's what we're going to do just the tendency to overcoach.
Well, and the tendency, if you're playing wide open or you don't have the energy to play defense, is to fall back. Tactically, that's the way Columbus can play at times, although their forecheck's not bad, but certainly we see that at Arizona. So I think it's that. And also when you get into these spots and, hey, it's a best of five, there's pressure on, I think, every group. Like what Pooley's saying there, it's so important that who manages the coaches, right? We look at the coaching staff manages the players. It's just important that the manager's there too. And hey, you lose the first game, sit down and just try to, hey, get everyone to relax if possible. But I'm sure that's going to be happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And for some teams, right, they play Saturday. Their first two games are in 2 days.
Yeah.
So there's not a whole heck of a lot of time if you did want to change things. It's not like you're going to have a day of practice in some cases in between.
Yeah, and being around a playoff series working for a team, as you would feel even here in Ottawa, like the ebbs and flows are incredible, right? Like when Ottawa gets on a run here and they win and we come in to work the next day on a day off, it's like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever. And you're feeling good, they lose a playoff game or a change in a series, it's like the sky is falling, right?
Yeah.
So it's hard to really manage that. And when he talked about personalities as far as intensity, the first thing I thought of actually was Rick Tocchet. And that's an old school guy. And if you don't have management around, and also if you're Rick Tocchet, suddenly the manager's walked out the door that I'm assuming he hired you. Are you starting to worry that if you lose this play-in series, you're going to be fired? And how do you end up approaching things then?
Yeah, yeah, that's very interesting. Do you think any team, I talk about the importance of, you know, we always talk about the importance of game one and a best of seven. Now we're talking about game one and a best of five.
Oh, I know.
Do you think any team will come back from 2-0 down to win a series?
I'm going to go with no. I think it just ends up being too much. But you know what? Hey, what am I to say? But it just feels like now, for a few reasons, if you're kind of in against the wall, you know, are you going to go quietly? Do I think you stretch it out? No, but I think it'll be really tough to overcome that. The bigger interest, and this is really, if you look at 1988, that was when Sean Burke came out of the playoffs, out of the Olympics, sorry, with New Jersey. But Jim Schoenfeld used a rotation of goaltenders, which was just really interesting, where it wasn't even predicated on a loss. I can remember Sean Burke winning a game, and he just ended up changing it up. So would coaches be bold enough with the goaltenders? Maybe not in a short series. But do I think, hey, you know what? Do you want to just switch out a whole line and put in some young legs or do something different if you feel like you got a team up against the wall?
I just wonder, just back to the kind of the mentality thing. I think it's one thing if you're in, if this was a, we'll call it a normal hockey season and a normal hockey playoff, you can talk yourself into, you know, hey, teams have come back from, you know, 3-0 down, the odd time to win 4-3, but certainly 2-0 down lots of times before. I just wonder, because you're coming in after sitting out for 4.5 months, you're going to be off again for, you know, if you lose in the first round, you're gonna be off again for, you know what, 3 more months, something like that.
Yeah.
Whether you just look at it and you go, not in the cards this year, boys. Yeah. Can't wait to get home. You know, it's
the
mentality, I think, is completely different this year in relation to any other year.
Well,
it's so atypical.
No, I agree. And I'll use Montreal as an example. Are you a proud bunch? For sure you are. But I wasn't planning to be at the party. We had 71 points. We sold players off. I'm down 2-0. And I also know, why does my manager keep talking about Lafreniere and the first pick overall, and he's not focused on this? Would that be a switch? Now, on the other side of that, and I'll say Tampa Bay. Like Tampa Bay, and if you're John Cooper, and you're starting to send a message right away, JR, after the embarrassment of Columbus last year, what if they're down 2-0 and they get swept? What's going to end up happening to him, right? So I think it would be the pressure point of the Tampas and the Pittsburghs, the teams, say, Boston, St. Louis. If they're down 2-0, could I see them coming back? Well, yeah, they have a championship pedigree. But for lots of other teams, it'd be like, hey, we got to say all the right things. But I don't even feel like right now that Carey Price is necessarily buying in with the Montreal Canadiens. I don't have any faith that he's going, oh, we got to suck it up here because I know that I'm going to win the next three. Then we get to go into the real playoffs, probably losing the first round, and I got to hunker down for another 2 weeks.
Exactly, when I'm in a place I don't necessarily want to be. Yeah, I think the mental part of what's going on right here, especially in within, I'll say the play-in round and even the first round of the playoffs, because some, you know, the top four teams in each conference are going to play three round-robin games, which they sort of care about, but not really.
Just friendlies.
Yeah, kind of getting through those that first round. I think once, you know, the eight teams that survive into round two, then it's kind of like, I don't want to say you can see the end because it's still 6 weeks away, right, and a potential championship. But you've got your feet underneath you.
Yeah.
So I think until then, all bets are off as to what we're going to see. I think we could see some crazy results.
Oh,
I think
sure.
We could. I don't think we're going to see comebacks at all. In fact, I think I'll be very keen to see whether a team that loses the first game, how many of those teams will actually come back to win a best of five.
Yeah, or just end up getting swept. And hey, players are so practical. We'll use the example last year of, look at St. Louis, they got in. Well, we recognize they were an underperforming team, finally found goaltending. That was a good hockey team. There's lots of teams when you expand it to 24 that don't even look at it. Well, if we win the play-in and we get to the first round, to your point, I think if you get to a final eight in a year like this, I think all eight teams think they can win, but I don't think the buy-in is going to be the same for a lot of play-in teams. And as I say, even to the first round, that it's like, hey, you know what, then I can hunker down. And also, is it to the final four, should you end up getting there, and Pooley pointed out the freshening up of it, families and families will be invited at that point, right? So
yes.
That's also a bit of a, you know, if that's the dynamic that kind of, you know, if that's, you know, the finish line for you, you say, hey, you know what, if I can get to that spot, then boy, that final four will be a pretty cool experience with the family.
I see the NHL, and I don't remember which league had done the same. It might have been the NBA. Had pictures in each guy has his own room, has pictures, family pictures, or whatever that they put in each of the guys' rooms. So that was a nice little touch, I think. And that's what Dave Poulin mentioned, that it wasn't just, hey, it's the general managers putting their heads together and how is this whole thing going to play out, but just, hey, listen, you're at a hockey rink. You're playing in a game for upwards of 3 hours. That leaves 21 hours a day in which you're doing something else. Now, you're thinking, you may be thinking about hockey for a lot of that, but for a lot of it, it's downtime. And the mental part of it, the mental grind, the how do I get away from the game when I'm in this bubble environment, the different things that and Dave called them, what do you call it, life skills? People that just, and I'm not sure, you know, what sort of background you'd have if you have a college degree in life skills, but just bringing those people into putting together some of the ideas of how this whole thing is going to work. I thought that was really smart.
Yeah, it is. And funny you say that, because we had a gentleman by the name of Gil Eagles back in the day when Pooley played for us, and it had mentalastics. And this was an exercise you were supposed to go through all on a daily basis. And it was all over the practice facility. Even when you went to the bathroom, it was on the door of kind of reading and this positive reinforcement. When we had Jimmy Montgomery on, and I talked to Monty the other day, and we'll get him on during this to kind of break down some of the games, I thought that one of the things that really remembered was he talked about his brain and working it out, right? And how the alcoholism side never stops working out. And I got to work out the other part of it. So for what Pooley's saying, yeah, I think for players, for sure, there's lots of things you want to go through. Now it's nice weather. You can play your video games. You can do some other things. But to stay focused and not want to be home, I'll take a little bit of work.
Are we all not waiting to see the first player to complain about the food too? Right, that started with the MLS first. They had those little lunches. Then the NBA. They were a little there were some players tweeting about that. Let's see what the NHL has to offer. Right?
Yeah.
Simmer's all about the Marche Movenpick in Toronto.
Well, yeah, but I'll be honest with you, Stevie. The mentality just is a little different. It really is, and also, it looks like they've got this thing set up. They've got 14 different restaurants. So what the NBA, I think, did is it didn't seem like they were prepared. The MLS, I think we have to be realistic as far as interest and budget involved here. I don't think there'll be a whole lot. And it was the NBA that had the team pitchers first because I saw the Raptors had done that as far as family. So, hey, you're as he pointed out, you're also copying what everybody else is doing.
Right.
Trying to figure
out. Best practices,
out,
right?
Yeah, like all these different. And other leagues have started it. You talk to the soccer people. What's worked? What hasn't worked? And like I said, and I just, at the end of the day, for Toronto and Edmonton, good on them. They wanted to host this. It'll be really interesting when you get the bill for putting this on versus what is made for the sport as to financially how much gain they'll end up being.
Now, everybody has been tested throughout the training camps that have gone on. Everybody will be tested. We're tested once they arrive. We'll be tested. I think it ends up being daily, I believe, or every other day once you get into the bubble. Is there a certain mark where you go, okay, this should be, like, if they have blocked it off, like they have said, like, if this bubble, like, there's a chain link fence that's blacked out and nobody gets out and nobody gets in anywhere, other than maybe guys that leave for emergency reasons and then come back. And those guys have to be isolated away and I think have four negative tests before they're allowed back in. Like, is there like a 10-day mark where you go, okay, this should be good to go. This is going to hold. Are you there already on that part of it?
No, well, I think you're close. The only thing, and I didn't see in the NHL, JR, but the NBA, the shocker for me was the workers that were going to be basically going in and out of there on a daily basis. I found that a little strange. So I think it's up to the athlete when you get in and you get comfortable and you start to look around. And again, I said to Pooley, said to you, I think there's a lot of guys that are coming. I'm coming out of South Florida right now or some of the other places in the United States. This might be the safest place on the planet to be right now. So as soon as that confidence is gained, and I think you'd have to be there to really feel that, but I think you're right. Then they'll just kind of look and say, hey, you know, not that you'd be irresponsible, because I think there's lots of reminders, but you would start to gain confidence in the whole project.
Yeah, I would be keen to know. So for the average guy, let's say let's choose some of the U.S. hotspots, which is, you know, Florida, Texas, Arizona, California.
Yeah,
none of the California teams are in the playoffs. So let's say the Dallas
Stars.
Ones,
yeah, for sure.
For a guy who's married, maybe has a family, and let's say he is Canadian, I'll use Jamie Benn as an example, right? I don't know that he's married, but let's say he is.
Okay.
That his family is maybe back in Canada, that he leaves Dallas, a hot spot, right? Knows his family is in a safe spot in Canada, right? Is now, as Dave Poulin mentioned, and you've talked about how, okay, I'm leaving a bad place and I'm going to what should be a good place.
Yeah.
How much of a relief that is to kind of go, I feel a hell of a lot more safer than I did even a week ago.
No, I would think it would be a lot. And anything, especially, because I do think, and this is, and Pooley said about Tampa Bay, you know, still, no matter what was going on, and they showed the fun picture of them all jet skiing to practice in Tampa Bay, you still don't think as a young athlete or as a young man you're ever going to get this, right? And so I think...
Well, they did say about Tampa, right? That was a real wake-up
call.
Well,
exactly. Right? But my point, like with Jamie Benn or anybody else, the fact that your family can be in a comfortable spot, boy, that's got to be the big thing, right? Because that would be, if I was running a team, I know once my athlete's in the bubble, he's good to go. But if his home is, you know, family is living in South Florida and that's on your mind every day, or, you know, you're worrying about your family. So if you can have the families in a safe spot, I think the athlete can check in and enjoy.
Right. All right. Well, it all begins tomorrow with exhibition games, including Toronto and Montreal. And then the games will begin for real starting on Saturday. And we will be your home of the Stanley Cup playoffs with select games, taking you right to the Stanley Cup final, if and when it happens. But we'll start on Saturday with, what should be, I think, a goal fest. Hawks and Oilers is a 3 p.m. game on Saturday. That's our first game right here on TSN 1200. We'll take a break, 8:53. Don't forget, Mike Morreale, president of CEBL, the Canadian League Basketball League, will join us after 9 o'clock. We'll talk about opening weekend, which included the first Blackjacks game and loss as they fell to... in their first game, 89-71, and they'll play game two actually tonight, taking on Edmonton. And we'll have that game for you at 7:30 here on TSN 1200. You know, like, stuff is starting, but stuff's been going on for a while, including, of course, the PGA Tour, which started mid-June. This past weekend was the 3M Championship held in Minnesota. This is the one that most of the guys... looked at and went, yeah, you know what? I think I'm going to skip that one in Minnesota. Yeah. So there's a World Golf Championship event this weekend, the St. Jude Classic, and then the weekend after that is the PGA Championship, which is the first major of the golf season, the first of three scheduled majors. And we're going to be back again with our TSN 1200 Majors Pool, sponsored by our good friends at Royal LePage Team Realty. So again, if you want to go on the website, tsn1200.ca, you'll see the banner across the top. Get yourself signed up, and by Wednesday, we're going to have the field up and running. And at this point, if you've participated in our golf pools before, you know the way it works. We'll have the boxes of nine players. You'll pick out your favorite out of each box. And if your team collectively has the lowest score to par, you'll win our first place prize, all courtesy of our friends at Royal LePage Team Realty. It's our TSN 1200 Majors Golf Pool. Again, it's online right now. Get yourself signed up, and then we'll let you know when the player field is, because I think they're finalizing it here in the next couple of days for the first major of the golf season coming up in 2 weeks, the PGA Championship.
Yeah, and hey, golf-wise, I got to admit, have not watched a lot. Checked in a couple of weeks ago to see where Tiger was at when not in contention, switched to Chanel. But when it comes to majors, a little different feel to it. So hey, starting to ramp up here, and for what I think will be a big transition, God forbid, we get to Labor Day weekend. Thank God, hopefully we're going to have some Raptors, some NHL playoff hockey, and also a couple more golf majors as well.
Yeah, and we'll wait and see what's going on with the CFL as well. Yeah. It was Friday, right? That was supposed to be the kind of CFL-imposed deadline to have a deal, to have some semblance of a season. Well, Friday came and went, and now we're into a new week. And, boy, a lot of players are very active on social media who are not very happy with what's been proposed by the Canadian Football League. And right now, none of them are getting any money. Yeah. There's been no announcement from the federal government yet about any potential support, although it's said to be there. I think the ask went from the initial $150 million, I believe the last number I saw mentioned, Simmer, was $43
million, yeah.
I believe, to kind of keep the league afloat. I don't think there's really much doubt at all that the government is going to have to give some money to the league for it to be able to pull off some semblance of a season.
Yeah.
I don't know whether, and I'm assuming that there are talks going on behind the scenes, but they got to get going here at some point, relatively soon.
And this, JR, hey, a couple of things you need. Money is and manpower. When you pull these things off, the resources that the NBA and that the NHL have, how much of the CFL side is just time? And when we had Dave Naylor on last week, he did touch on anyone he's talked to. There is no chance that this is feasible without some money from the government. So if you do a deal with TSN, what's that going to look like as far as financial dollars? And then you support it. But the one thing when we had Dave on, JR, and this goes back to the logistics part, what was figuring out how to get all of these players individually into Canada, which for a lot of places and a lot of cities now, I think the international checkpoints are Montreal, Toronto, Vancouver, and Calgary. So anything else is going to be transit to somewhere else. How the hell do you handle testing? Like, you test them before they get on the plane, then they're on to a commercial flight, and then when they get to Canada, how you handle it? And I didn't, just in the back of my mind, and I think back to that crazy, what was the fella that had the, it was a Carter fella that had the issue with Coach Campbell back in the day, right, where he pushed him on the sideline?
Yes.
Do you remember how long it took for them to deal with that? And they finally sat down in an airport at the Montreal airport and dueled out his suspension? Like, it went weeks, if not months, and I just looked at this and thought, I don't know, man. I don't know if I'm feeling this, that the league is going to be able to pull this off logistically.
Well, the feel I get from it is I even wonder if the league wants to. I mean, they're kind of saying one thing publicly, but their actions suggest something else.
Yeah, great point.
Right?
Yeah, and I don't for a second think, and I'd love to see them get support, but I don't think for a second that if they don't play for a year based on the model, and this is what the NHL's facing, if we were to start another season, you know, hey, I'm better off not opening up the doors here. I'm going to lose more under this scenario. For what gain? And I think you start it up the following year. People understand where the world is at. I think there'll be lots of players lining up to play. And I'm not going to say they'll be perfect, but I'm sure you're right that there's a number of franchises that say, you know what, I'm better off just not playing this year.
Well, and if we put aside from a financial point of view, you know, there is some talk of, well, if you miss a season, well, that's it. The league is done. Fans will turn away. They'll move on to new things. And I kind of think to myself, is that really the case?
I don't feel it is.
If you're a CFL fan, right, you're immensely disappointed that this year doesn't happen. But you also look at it and you go, hey, hell, I mean, we're in crazy times right now. And the season has come and gone. If by next year, you know, hopefully we're back to some semblance of normal, where fans can go to games and we've returned to just normal life and players can move about and come into Canada without going into quarantine, et cetera.
Yeah.
If we're at that spot, are fans going to stop going to games? I don't think so.
Yeah.
Like, I really don't. I think people have wrapped their heads around that everything is on the table right now as far as how we're going to do it and how we're going to react to it once it happens. So I think the CFL never played a down this season. I think it's entirely realistic it come back next season. And is there a bit of a downturn? Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a it's a killer for the league
no,
myself.
No, I don't either. And honestly, when you look at individuals around the league, like, you know, this isn't Wayne Gretzky deciding he's not going to play. I, there's a lot of athletes out there, a lot of people that will end up coming back. I think the league would end up being fine. The real question you're going to have, and this is the issue for the CFL and their biggest markets, Montreal, Vancouver, and Toronto, how much further down can you go from a corporate standpoint, then trying to get bums in the seat again? So much is going to be predicated on where the economy's at, because if whatever the competition, if I'm here in Ottawa or Edmonton, and the Edmonton Oilers are selling out games, or the Calgary Flames, what's the trickle-down effect to a CFL team? But as far as wanting to go, I can only speak to the experience here in Ottawa that, I mean, there isn't a person that doesn't attend a game there that just thinks it's one of the greatest things they've ever done, and it, hey, it's far more than football. It's one hell of a party, too.
Yeah. Anyway, we'll wait and we'll see on that. But again, time is ticking here. We're at pretty much at the end of July. If you're talking about having some semblance of a training camp, as you mentioned, just getting American players up here, in all likelihood, probably having to undergo a 14-day quarantine once they do come up, then a training camp, and then moving to Winnipeg, which is would serve as the hub city if something were to happen.
Yeah,
you don't want to be, you know, you don't, if you don't have to, you don't want to be playing games into December. Your window, and all the health experts have said, and all these leagues have designed their seasons so that they'll be over in October, except for the NFL, over by October.
Yeah.
Right? They want to kind of get, because if there is a second wave, it's kind of into November, December. We'll be done by then. Well, to be over in November, you got to get started here pretty soon, even for as little as a six-game regular season.
Yeah, and I don't even know what we call it in the United States. Is this still wave one? Is this wave two? Is it more waves to come? We got an election in November. All bets are off when it comes to the United States as to whether or not this will ever go away.
All right, thoughts on any of that? Always welcome. Text us at 12-1200. You can tweet at us at TSN 1200. We'll take a break.